Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today is another Bob and Richard Answer Their Mailbox show. We enjoy doing this, and as long as you keep sending us questions, we're going to keep it doing it. So anything you want to know about gambling, we'll either give it our best shot or tell you, go ask somebody else. The first thing I want to talk about is we are taping this on June 15th. The Las Vegas casinos have been open for 11 days. And I have been to several, none on the Strip. The South Point would be no surprise to you, and the others would qualify as local casinos. What I am finding is they are taking your temperature when you go in automatically. You might not even know what's going on. They have this, they're pointing these devices at you, and it just takes your temperature, and as long as it's below the magic number of 101.4 or whatever that magic number is, they just said, fine, you know, have a nice day, good luck, something like that. All of the employees are wearing masks. Maybe half of the customers are wearing masks. Maybe when they come in, maybe half, and after a little while, a lot of those masks come off. Smoking is down a little bit because it is harder to smoke with the mask on, but there's not a whole lot of mask there. They have social distancing stickers on the floor and in various places saying keep this far apart that are moderately looked at, but not real seriously. There are people disobeying that, forgetting it's there. This actually scares the shit out of me. I think this virus is not finished with us yet. And so it scares me. So I definitely am a chicken with a mask. And if I'm not the only one playing, if somebody moves a couple machines over from me, I'm done for the day. So I'm pretty chicken. There have been some good opportunities. There are some plays that are better than average. There are some casinos, like Station Casinos, turned out to be worse than average. They are
they cut their points in half for video poker.
They cut their points in half, and they haven't opened up three or four or five of their locations. So they're in a survival mode, and their belief is make things tighter is the best way for them to survive. Several other casinos are doing variations of, we have missed you. Here's something a little bit juicy to help welcome you back. So you just kind of have to look around and find out what it is. I wouldn't be surprised if mailers and things, for those of you who get mailers, are bigger. People, they want you back. And so if you're willing to brave the environment, this is a lucrative time to be in Vegas. If, of course, if you catch the coronavirus, you'll be sorry you did.
I'm kind of surprised by that you've been going out.
Not a lot, but there are some. I have been getting some offers, and there are some plays that I have been doing at off hours that are much more lucrative than what I was playing in March and before.
And I assume you're going in the middle of the night when there are a lot less people around.
When I can, there are some that aren't available in the middle of the night, but yes.
Now, what about, have you, I mean, we've had very few really hot days so far, so you haven't had any issues with walking through a hot parking lot and then being, you know, having an elevated temperature?
No, mainly I'm not there at noon, and I'm usually going from an air conditioned car pretty quickly into the casino. So I have not had an issue of that.
Now, have you seen any anything to do with them asking you to remove your mask? I mean, I saw one photo of a place where they wanted you to remove your mask when you were at the cashier's cage, presumably to get a good shot of your face. But have you seen anything like that about coming in with a mask on? No problems with that at all?
No problems, but I'm a video poker player who gets W2Gs, and so sure. You have to show IDs. And the places where I've been getting the W2Gs, I'm a known player. And so even with the mask on, when they have the driver's license there, they go, yeah, that's you. And insofar as using the cage, usually I don't have to use the cage. You can usually cash out tickets at kiosk around the casino. So I usually don't use the cage.
Yeah, I've been seeing reports from people who had said that mask use was as low as 25%.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's on certain times of the day, it's going to be less than that. On probably Saturday night, I wasn't around, but it's a Saturday night. It's a party night in Las Vegas. And drinking and carousing, and I'm sure it was lower than 25% then.
Yeah, people have been talking about this idea of being able to play with a mask on, and I'm skeptical that you would get away with much for long. Maybe some of our listeners can tell us if they have experience wearing masks at table games and how that's worked for them.
Well,
you can always email us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or hit me up on Twitter or Facebook or whatever.
One of our sponsors is blackjackapprenticeship.com, and they have a number of reports of their blackjack players who have gone into casinos and what the conditions are. And so if you go to that site, there are a number of examples. And generally, apparently, it appears as though you can get away with it more. You can get away with card counting more than you usually would, simply because it takes longer to identify you, because in the past, they used facial recognition and the pit boss's memory to pick off a lot of players.
Sure.
And so it's easier to be in disguise when you have a relatively complete mask on. And so they're overwhelmed with the number of people to look at. So yes, eventually they can use software and stuff to find you, but you're likely to get down some significant plays, with it.
I'm sure the mileage will vary depending on how paranoid the particular casino is.
Yes. One example I heard was there are some casinos with plexiglass between the players. Now, most of them don't have that, but at least that's true in some, which has a potential to make hole carding easier with that reflection.
Yeah, so I'm totally skeptical of that. The idea of seeing the reflection of a hole card in the plexiglass, you know, it's one of those ideas that sounds great when you're high at 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever, but I'd be very skeptical of people actually being able to make that work. I don't know. Maybe somebody did. As I say, I'm just skeptical.
All right. Let's get on to some of our questions. First one says, I heard Richard say that counting systems more complicated than high-low are mental masturbation. But I've also heard Richard say that he recommends learning more than the illustrious 18 deviations. First, he wants to know if he's remembered Richard's position on these two issues correctly. And second, he wants to know if Richard has rule of thumb for where to stop learning index plays. At a certain point, too many index plays end up slowing you down.
I don't think they slow you down. I mean, I think a good amount is in professional blackjack. Wong used the indexes from -1 to +6. I think that's a very reasonable and easy to memorize group of indexes, indices. All right, maybe I'm a little harsh calling it mental masturbation, but there is no, this is not where the money is. In counting cards, the money is in penetration, the amount of your bet spread, and game speed. That's where the money is. All these other things, like a stronger count or more indices, are small, very small gains compared to those other three factors. And now, also, it depends on why you're counting cards. Some people like the challenge of doing something difficult, learning something difficult, so they want to play a 2 or a 3 or a 4 level count just to be able to say to themselves, oh, I mastered something really difficult. And if that's what you're after, then, you know, fine. Good for you. I would say that if you're interested in making money, you're going to be able to play many more hours, which is another thing your success will be determined by, is how many hours you play. And you'll be able to play longer and with fewer mistakes if you're using a simpler count.
Okay. And I have nothing to add to that. The next question, also for Richard, also on blackjack. Online casinos playing blackjack. Do you have any experience with those sites? And do you have any advice or pitfalls to look out for?
Well, I have a lot of experience prior to 2006 when the Unlawful Internet Gaming Enforcement Act happened. If your idea is to count cards at an online casino against 8-deck games that are cut in half or even worse, then I would recommend no. Again, that's not where the money is. The money in online casinos is in the bonuses they give you. So, you know, and usually blackjack is not the best game to be playing to capture those bonuses.
You would want to play roulette or craps where you could bet all the money at once?
Well, usually you are trying to lose all the money as quickly as possible. But, you know, there's also the consideration of cover and not looking like a bonus hustler. So usually the best thing to be playing is slots. And ironically, for many online casinos, they have slots where the return is higher than what it would be on roulette.
Really?
Yeah, there are many casinos, and some casinos, depending on what country they're in, they are required to post the payback on the machines in the help section. And many online casinos have slots that are returning 96%, so better than a 00 roulette wheel.
Yes. Okay. Another question for Richard. You mentioned you're sure monopolizing the show, partner.
Yeah, you're the one picking the questions.
It is. My turn will come. You mentioned that heat tends to ramp up when you go from betting red chips to betting green chips. But on one recent show, you said that above a certain level, heat decreases. What's that level at which you're betting so much that the heat subsides?
$1,000 chips. Many people find that they get less heat once they're betting, you know, $5,000 a hand or something like that. Now, of course, every casino is different, and it always can vary, but this is something that many people have mentioned, that they found they got less heat when they were betting, you know, huge amounts. I think maybe it's because they're worried about offending somebody who is potentially the best possible customer.
Okay. So next time I want to be ignored, I will start betting $1,000 chips.
Oh, it's not that you're ignored. It's just that it's you're given deference, not heat.
All right. There's another question about Illustrious 18. How much more should you learn than that? So instead of letting Richard answer it like he did earlier, I'm going to give it a go. The answer depends on your goals. Life is too short to become expert at everything. For me, my good enough is good enough attitude applies to cooking, social dancing, and knowing all the ins and outs of the iPhone. Insofar as gambling is concerned, if I'm going to play a game for money that's important to me, I'm going to learn everything I can about it. You're the only one to decide how important your gambling hobby is to you. If you're serious about winning, the Illustrious 18 isn't nearly good enough. If you play occasionally for money that isn't very important to you, basic strategy is sufficient. Nobody else can decide your priorities for you.
Makes sense. Yeah.
All right. A loyal listener from Amsterdam. The question. Have you or people you know ever played backgammon or have interesting stories about Rocky Aoki, A-O-K-I? It seems incredible that despite all his endeavors, car racing, restaurant magnate, boat racing, etc., he was able to also become a world champion at backgammon. Or is that story a bit exaggerated too?
I have no idea. I've never encountered Rocky Aoki, so I really have. If you know what, I didn't know about this question, or I would have asked some of my backgammon friends. but I don't know.
Okay, I had to look him up. I wasn't familiar with the name. He founded Benihana's, which is a Japanese restaurant. Was a wrestling champion in his younger days and was a self promoter. Some of the claims about him are probably true, but many are probably not. How well he played backgammon, I have no idea. He definitely did not win or place at the annual world championship held in Monte Carlo. I have looked up all the winners and second place finishers of that since it started, and his name is not on the list. But he definitely could have won other significant tournaments, but I don't know. I've never met him or seen him.
Yeah, it depends on – I mean, if it depends on when he was supposedly playing – if it was in the 70s and 80s, you know, he was definitely not a top player, or I would have run across him. You know, if it was after that, I don't know. But I can ask around. Maybe I'll remember next time we do one of these and can comment.
Okay, I did send Richard these questions a few days ago. Maybe I should send him more than a few next time. So maybe that's my fault.
No, it was me. I forgot to get to it.
The next listener, he has a question about a topic, is a definition of losing streak. What constitutes a losing streak? I've heard many people on the show talk about how long they can last, the effects of losing streaks, etc., but never definition of a losing streak. So for me, a Supreme Court justice once said about a totally different subject that he couldn't define it, but he knows it when he sees it. That's pretty much the way a losing streak is. Generally, it means you're losing money. People differ on definitions, and whatever your definition is will not be universally accepted, but you pretty much know what a losing streak is. Richard?
Yeah, I don't have a definition, a set definition. I could see talking about having a short losing streak versus a long losing streak or something, but yeah, there's no, I don't have any set number of hours or hands or money or.
All right. Another question. Most of us have not and will not ever hit a six-figure or larger jackpot in our lives. Can you describe the process that takes place in non-Indian casino when a giant jackpot hits? If the winner wants $1 million cash, for example, will the casino oblige? Also, what types of reviews does the winning hand take place? What type of reviews take place? Now, I've never hit a seven-figure jackpot. I've hit several dozen six-figure ones, most of them exactly 100,000, which is a normal royal for a five-coin, $25 machine. I have never asked for all cash. If you demand cash, you will be accommodated, although you may well need to wait several hours or maybe come back the next day for that request to be honored. My usual request is to first pay off all markers at that casino, if any. Second, take some amount of cash if my cash on hand is running low. If I'm planning to play that size machine a lot in the near future, I'll usually leave some or all of it on deposit at the cage. I take the remainder as a check, which can turn out to be the full amount. When it's in the cage and they're drawing against it, it makes it a whole lot easier than counting it out. And at most places, if you want a $20,000 marker of money you have in a cage, they can do that in less than 5 minutes and just do it automatically and give you tickets of a suitable size. Now, every casino has its own procedures for internal control measures. After a big jackpot is hit, these controls can be different for, say, under 10,000, they do it one way, between 10,000 and 50,000 another way, 50,000 and 250 another, over 250, etc. Each casino has its own way. It also matters if you're a regular customer or somebody they've never seen before. It also matters if it's a bigger casino where such jackpots are relatively commonplace, or a small joint where those things happen very rarely. That's all I got on that subject. Richard, how many of these jackpots have you hit?
Well, I have hit none. But I would say in table games, they must go review the tape. So, you know, say you hit a royal flush in Caribbean stud or something, some hand like that in one of the table games. Most places will want to review the tape before they pay you. And that can sometimes take quite a long time. And I'm really skeptical that the people reviewing the tape even know what they're looking for at the time that they do it. But in Nevada, at least, I think they are required to have enough cash to pay you in cash if you want it. I don't think you would have to come back the next day. Now, Mega Millions or a Mega Bucks, you don't get the whole amount. It's paid out over 20 years or something. So, but yeah, anyway, if you want the money in cash. But I have seen it take a couple of hours at a table game tied up before they actually paid the guy who won a big hand like that.
I play sometimes at Dottie's, which is a chain of mostly not entirely 15 machine establishments. And they used to have $25 NSU, which is a 99.7 game with enough benefits that it was worthwhile playing for me. And so I hit three or four of the royals of 100,000 before that game evaporated. And the small casinos definitely do not have the money on hand. At those casinos, when you run out of money, they call in to the supervisor. There's a route of all the Dotties, and they have to come out and pay you, whether it's a check or cash. And it can be a wait. Sometimes one supervisor is covering 10 stores over some kind of area. There's a lot of Dotties, but some of the areas are pretty big between the north and the south or the east and the west. So I've definitely had to wait a couple hours to be paid on some of those. But so frequently I would bring a book when I went in to play at Dotties, and other players would ask me, why the hell would you bring a book to a casino? And I go, you really don't want to know. But then when I hit a royal, and if I have cash to keep playing, I'll play on another machine. But usually I don't. At Dotties, they have a system where the mailers you get are based on the last 4 months of play. So the amount of my normal play gives me mailers of about $200 or $300 a week. But after I immediately hit a big royal of some sort, doesn't have to be $100,000, $40,000 will do it. The next several months I get mailers of $2 a week or $1 a week. And so with the mailers definitely affect the playability of these games. So once you've hit the big royal, whether it's, you know, 20 or 30 or 40,000 or higher, your mailers are already screwed. And so that makes it a not so playable game. So I will frequently sit there and read, and people can't figure it out. But they're playing Keno 40 cents at a time. And I don't want to have to explain to them, well, it's in case I hit a $40,000 jackpot that I have this precaution. They don't understand. So let's go on. Could you be more specific about the opportunities that are beyond counting? Presumably talking about the opportunities in James Grosjean's book, which originally was Beyond Counting, and then the second edition is called Exhibit CAA. Are these opportunities as good as regular blackjack card counting when one factors in how rare they are? To put it another way, if I spend 10 minutes in each casino scouting three-card poker for hole carding and only find an opportunity 1% of the time, isn't it better to have just played regular blackjack and skipped all the scouting? Richard.
Well, in that particular example, then yes, that's true. If you could just spend all those hours counting cards, you would have made more money. Three-card poker is sort of one rung up the ladder from card counting. And, you know, your edge is not very high. Usually the limits are not very high on three-card poker. So, yes, but as you learn games other than blackjack, other than counting cards at blackjack, not only does your edge go up, but your heat goes down. So once you find one of these games, you know, say you have a blackjack game that's worth $100 an hour to you. Well, you might find a game that's beyond counting that's worth $1,000 an hour or $2,000 an hour. So, I don't know. You know, you have to decide how you like your work environment, right? Some people would rather just walk in the casino, go straight to the table and play. And other people would say, I'd rather spend 90% of my time walking around looking for that one game that's going to be worth, you know, 10 times more money or more, that is also not going to get me barred probably. So it just depends, you know. But here's the other problem. That same player, are you going to at least go look at the other tables in the casino where you're going to go play blackjack? Or are you going to go directly to the blackjack table and not even bother to look? And now you could have scouted the other tables, and there might be some game that's worth far more than your blackjack game, but you didn't even bother to go look around. So,
all right. Next question, same listener. He said, Colin Jones, blackjackapprenticeship.com, with whom he says he agrees 99% of the time, has said in some of his videos that his guys routinely get four-hour-long sessions at EVs of $400 an hour. How do they do it without getting backed off and or barred? This guy goes on to say he plays $100 per hour EV, and he can't last more than one or two big shoes in Mississippi before getting backed off. Red flag specific to him. He doesn't use a player's card. He uses a gigantic bet spread in order to get $100 EV at 6x. And he looks like the kind of guy who would do blackjack card counting. He's tried some of the standard covered plays, but nothing has worked for him other than leaving after one or two big shoes. So how do you do it, Richard?
Well, you get in your car and you keep driving until you find a place that lets you play. That's how they do it. They don't, you know, they don't get 4-hour sessions at every place they play. In fact, they get them at the minority of places they play. But they get in their car and they just drive down the road to the next one until, you know, eventually there are places that will let you play for a while before they throw you out. And that's how they do it. And it sounds like you're sticking to Mississippi, which may be close to home, but probably is not a good place to play. Biloxi and you know, that area has a reputation for communicating amongst each other. So you get thrown out of one place, a flyer with your face on it is probably going to all the rest of them. So you're not going to get much time in down there. You know, drive to Louisiana and then to New Mexico and Arizona and, you know, just keep going.
All right. Next listener, it's a table game. And so since Richard has been monopolizing this conversation so far, I'm going to answer the question, then let him correct me. Listener says, I follow Max Rubin's advice and have read Comp City. The last time I was in a casino, I overheard the two dealers chatting with each other, looking at me about how I must have been rat-holing chips. So I got nabbed that time. I wonder how often it may have been noticed before, but I didn't realize it. My question is how he can be more careful and whether there's anything else he should be cognizant of. So I'm going to try it first. And that is, rat holing is a process of putting chips in your pocket discreetly so as to disguise how much you've been winning or exaggerate how much you've been losing. Generally, you're going to be caught if you're the only player or the biggest player at the table. You'll have a better chance of success if you're the smallest player at the table. You don't need to rat hole every time. Sometimes dealers can't know for sure you've been rat holing. Sometimes they're just speculating and looking at your face for a reaction when they mention it. How's your poker face? Richard.
Yeah, you need a victim. So you need someone else at the table that it's plausible that they stuck the chips in their pocket instead of you. You may want to point out when somebody gets up and leaves the table, wow, that guy had a lot of chips. He kept putting them in his pocket.
You want to be nasty to other people?
Why is that nasty? Maybe it'll be good for his rating. I don't know. but the other thing is you may want to deliberately go to a table. Let's say you're betting black chips. You may want to go see if you can find a table that has other people betting black and purple so that you are the smaller one of the smaller players at the table, and they have much bigger fish that they can say, oh, that guy must have taken them. As Bob pointed out, you can't rat hole chips at the table if you're the only player.
All right. Another player can't get the podcast to download. Only wants to start. Alt-click does not work for him now. He swears it used to work okay. Also, how do you do it on an iPad or iPhone? Thanks.
Well, first of all, I hate Mac products. and we have had a lot of complaints about people with iPhones about I think this is an iTunes problem or whatever they now call it, because if I go to the website, I can see the podcast there. But yeah, as far as help that you can get with iPad or iPhone, I'm not the guy at all. But as I say, you're not alone. There have been a lot of reports of these problems. But I recommend an app called Stitcher. It works great for me. And also, if you listen to Spotify, you can find the show on Spotify. And if all else fails, you can always just go to YouTube and get it on YouTube.
Very good. Blister says he's a big fan. Thank you. He listens to all our episodes. I'm a quarter full pay Jack's or Better progressive chaser. Full pay on Jack's or Better starts out at 99.54 and goes up. He lives in New York City and plays exclusively at Caesars Atlantic City. The question is, which casinos in Las Vegas have good full pay quarter progressives? Plans to visit in the near future when the shutdown is over. Thank you in advance. And you may withdraw the answer when you hear, may withdraw the thanks when you hear my answer is, I don't know. I'm not a quarter player. Definitely have not scouted, quarter progressives, full pay or otherwise. There's no list published that I know about. Sorry. I'm assuming you have nothing to add on that one, Richard.
No.
A teacher quarantined at home with a lot of free time on his hands these days. One thing he started to do is go back and listen. He binge listened to Gambling with an Edge podcast. Do you two have any recommendation of memorable guests you have had or top five list of the best episodes you've had over the years? For me, Kelly's son has to be on that list. She was Phil Ivey's partner during his edge sorting escapades at Baccarat. As a lifelong Jeopardy fan, I was personally thrilled when James Holzhauer was sitting 4 feet away from us during the interview. And many people have told us that they like these Bob and Richard answers shows, or Answer the Mailbox shows, more than the regular interview. Richard, what are your favorites?
Yeah, I would put the Kelly Sun show up there. Another, two of my favorites are, the Billy Baxter interviews.
Yes.
He was just great. He's just got amazing stories. Yeah, that's what sticks out off the top of my head. I mean, there are some, you know, we've had Bob Nersessian on, I don't know, 14 or 15 times, and there were some of those that I thought were really good, but for the life of me, I couldn't tell you which ones.
There was a poker player named Limon, L-I-M-O-N.
Oh, yeah.
Who, full expletive late, and, it was, he would say words that Richard and I don't normally say, but it was fun.
He was very funny. And Small Cap Growth.
Yeah.
Who, Small Cap Growth was a blackjack player, and, some of his episodes were quite entertaining.
All right. So the next guy has heard about Exhibit CAA book. He can't afford the copies he's found. And since he's not a known player, James Grossjean won't sell him one. So to clarify, the question is, if it can't get a copy of CAA, where does he look for equivalent information?
Wow. You can't find, you nowhere. I mean, first of all, I want to say something, important, and that is, if you are looking online for Exhibit CAA, be very careful, because his first book was called Beyond Counting. And the second book is called Beyond Counting Exhibit CAA. And you want to make sure, if you are going to shell out, you know, $2,000 or whatever somebody is trying to get for it, that they're selling the second book, not the first. There are certain things that other people have produced that replicate you know, a chapter or part of a chapter, but, you know, to get the rest of it, you know, sorry, I don't have an answer for you about where to find it. I mean,
and, if you can't afford it, then you don't really have the bankroll to take advantage of it anyway. Okay. Next question is a question for Houston. Says, can he do a video or some presentation on how to spot a mechanic, how to see crooked games, and how to avoid cheating at home games? Play at poker home games and would like to see more card shark moves. So he's referring to Houston Curtis, who's a card mechanic who recently published a $1 billion Hollywood heist. We passed on the question to him. He is already releasing such videos. He publishes 2 videos a month for cardplayer.com. The one I looked at recently involved a few cheating moves from the movie Rounders. The moves displayed went too fast for me to see, but I learned how to spot the grip used by many bottom dealing cheaters. If you see that grip, hit the road. Next question is for me. Take that, Richard. Any tips on buying a vintage video poker machine for quarantine boredom just for fun? And I'm not in Vegas, so few if available local. So there's a bunch listed on Google, probably some on Craigslist. I haven't checked. Locally in Vegas, they're sold by the Gambler's General Store, and I'm sure they ship. I have no knowledge of this market at all. Next question. Guy 64 and just started playing blackjack 2 years ago. Had some good games, no real big losses, probably because I'm a conservative player. I know I could have been winning lots more. I have blackjack training apps on my phone, Blackjack Apprenticeship Trainer Pro, and Blackjack 101. Plus, I have a card table set up with an 8-deck shoe and discard tray. Any suggestions for an old fart like me? Richard.
I'm not sure what suggestions you're looking for. I'm not sure what you're asking. I mean, you sounds like you're already counting cards. I mean, are you competent? What is it that you're trying to accomplish? Are you trying to make spare money? And I mean, yeah, I just don't know what to tell you because I'm not sure exactly what it is you're asking. Go out and play. Yes. Have fun.
Sounds like you could get advantage out of the Blackjack Apprenticeship Boot Camp, where they evaluate your play and you meet a bunch of working pros who have all kinds of tips. And some of them may be, you may strike a chord with, you may find them an interesting person, and they may find the same for you likewise. And so having a mentor or a partner or someone to share information with can be very useful.
You know, the other thing I would say is I'm a little bit leery of your comment that I'm a conservative player. I could have won more. You know, it makes me wonder if you're really spreading as much as you should be spreading. But I don't know what that means exactly. Maybe you're just quitting when you're up a little bit and don't want to get heat. So, I don't know.
All right. Somebody wants to know, Richard, if you have ever had your signals picked off at a table.
Yes. Well, not exactly. I had a situation where we were trying to get a couple of civilians off a table. 3 of us were on the table. There were 2 civilians, and we needed to get them off. So we were trying to do that. And so we were doing the usual things, splitting 10s, hitting 15 against a 6, whatever we could to try to get rid of them. And the 3 of us, of course, are acting like we don't know each other. And at one point, it was one of the players, it was just driving him crazy. And he couldn't take it anymore. And at some point he was like, I can't, you know, I can't believe you're going to hit that 15 against a 6 and you don't know anything about what you're doing or how to even play this game. And the other guy at the table just very calmly says, oh, he knows exactly what he's doing. These three guys are together and they're trying to get the two of us off the table.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it was one of those gulp, you know, and nobody said anything. And so that was the one time that comes to mind where, I mean, they didn't pick off literally our signals, but they certainly picked off exactly what was going on at the table.
There have been cases I have heard of where two teams were at the same hole carding tables and they each had signals and they would be signaling the same thing so they could figure out each other's signals. And so,
I have definitely done that. I have landed on a table where somebody, was making a play. This is when I was young and stupid and I thought, oh, I will just pick off their signals. And, yeah, which is pretty easy to do if you know what's going on. I would never do that today just because I don't want to get caught up in somebody else's heat or whatever. So, but yes, I have picked off other people's signals.
And for me, I once waved at a cocktail waitress wanting her to stop, and the pit boss knew exactly what I was doing right away. So maybe that doesn't count. So have you guys ever used a magnetron, and how did you do? I don't know what a magnetron is. Richard?
I don't know what a magnetron is either. I thought that was like a transformer.
Do you think
cartoon transformer, not the electrical transformer.
Do you think our show has sparked a new wave of APs that wouldn't have existed otherwise?
Oh, I have no idea.
Yeah, nor do I. We get several people who find it interesting and have more of appreciation for how it's done than it used to be. So there's probably more people get inspired by the show, but I don't know that they would qualify as a wave.
Well, I don't remember ever getting an email that said, I started listening to your show and it made me want to go out and learn to count cards. So I did. And now I'm a successful professional player. I don't think I've ever gotten an email like that. So I guess no, there's no wave.
I've gotten a lot of those emails related to video poker, not so much about the shows, but with the writing and stuff that I do. So I've gotten a lot of those emails and some of them have mentioned the show, but, oh well. Okay. Somebody is a new card counter who has not taken his game to a casino. Been training for several months and hoped to get ready to when the casinos reopen. Given his limited bankroll experience, he calculates he'll be a red chipper with a higher spread of 1 to 12 or 1 to 15. The question is about whether or not I should play rated. From listening to the show and the BJA podcast, I doubt I will attract much heat playing red and very little green, but are the comps and other benefits of being rated worth it? I would love to hear your thoughts and any advice you might have. Richard?
Yeah, you won't get much heat or attention until you do. And at that point, if they have your name and all that, they will always have it, and they will have your picture to go along with it. So I would not play rated. Definitely not. You know, I've said many times on the show, your clean name has real value eventually. I know you're starting out small, but, I would keep my name clean.
Okay. We're going to take a commercial break right now. We still have several questions left and we'll be back to them right after the break. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. the promotion in June is emails. Not emails. It is free play with a kicker. Pick up your regular email Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And if you do, you're eligible for the same amount Friday or Saturday of the same week. Pick up all seven of those, which were available in June, and you'll have a double free play amount to be picked up in on June 29th or 30th. We will not have any fall video poker classes for the rest of this year. Hopefully we'll be back by January. It's all up to the virus. Predicted.org is a market where you can place small bets on the occurrence of various political events, mostly but not entirely in the United States. The most active markets now are who's going to be the nominees for vice president and who will win in various states. The prices have been changing over the past several weeks. Trump's fortunes have been going south and Biden's have been going north. So the prices will change effectively. If you have a good feeling for what's going to happen 5 months from now, this is a place you can make small bets and profit if you're right. Gambling with an Edge listeners receive a one-time offer of a deposit match up to $20 at predicted.org/promo/edge. You must play the money through once and cannot withdraw it for 30 days. BlackjackApprenticeship.com is an excellent site for those of you who wish to be successful at counting cards at blackjack. The most recent video they have posted is about using cover and camouflage in casinos, which is three tips to stay a little longer at the table. I watched it and I found the information presented. It's basic, but a good reminder. I found it useful at blackjack as well as, at video poker as well as blackjack. So, it wasn't anything I wasn't generally familiar with, but it was well organized and a good reminder. VideoPoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Wheel Poker with Quick Quads. 7 coins per line, which is 1 extra for the wheel and 1 extra for the quick quads. The wheel spin averages 157.5 coins, and you get it for every quad and every quick quad. The double-double bonus version at the South Point returns some 99.8% and is available for triple play and 5-play quarters. All right, we are back to our question. This is a long question. I'm going to skip the long question. If you ask a shorter question, you have a better chance of making it on the air. One player goes to the Borgata with his wife. He's a horse player and spends his time in the race book. His wife plays blackjack. She understands basic strategy and accepts a negative EV as a cost of entertainment. The problem arises when she's doing poorly at the tables and decides to play slots. She goes from some negative EV to 100% loss. Any thought about what she could do to minimize the slot damage? Leaving her at home is not an option, nor is telling her no slots. Richard, you're first. Good luck.
Well, first, her EV does not go to minus 100%.
Yes.
Second, I would say that the best thing to do would be to try to teach her video poker. You can get a program that she can practice on the computer at home, and maybe you could get her hooked on that, where her EV, her negative EV, would be, you know, much, much less than it would be on the slots. So, and I really wonder how much her negative EV is compared to yours if you're a horse bettor. So you're fading an enormous vig to the house. Now, admittedly, you're probably making far fewer bets per hour than she is. But anyway, yeah, that would be my suggestion. See if you can get her hooked on video poker.
All right. There's a clip on YouTube with Dana White, who's the guy who owns the UFC, getting backed off from a Vegas casino after winning $1 million on blackjack. This listener hears he's been backed off from a number of shops. Do you think he's counting cards or just using basic strategy and getting positive variance? Richard.
I don't know Dana White. I do know that Las Vegas casinos do not like losing and they don't like taking big swings. So it would not surprise me at all if he just had gotten lucky and they just don't want action that big. Now, why they don't just tell him, you know, we don't want you betting that much, and keep him as a player, I don't know. I would be really shocked if he was a winning player. I suspect it's just that he got lucky, and I'm sure he loves to publicize the idea that he got backed off, that he is some threat to the casino.
In the video I saw, he displayed a rack of $1,000 chips where the full rack is worth $100,000. He said he's been winning for 5 months. At the cage, he was shown collecting some money. Now, casinos in Vegas are not going to put up with those kind of losses for an extended period of time, so the story doesn't add up. There's something fishy about it. How much is true, I just don't know.
Right. I mean, it's just, I mean, even if you're a fantastic card counter, you would have to get enormously lucky to win for 5 straight months. Yeah, it's just, you know, I'm sure we've all run into these gamblers who tell you, oh, yeah, I always win. Whenever I go to Vegas, I always win. Anyway.
I've more heard my brother-in-law always wins.
Oh, yeah, I've had that too. Yeah.
Yeah, but much more of that because one of our listeners gave us an update. He said listeners recently had some questions about playing blackjack in casinos in Australia. He says, don't bother. Most have those stupid continual shuffle machines and they're only casinos in the major city, of which they have about 7. Australia has a fascination with pokies, which are a form of slot machine. There are thousands nationwide in almost every pub and club. They're a cash cow for state government. He's not found any video poker table games are as rare as hen's teeth. So I thank you for the update. I did not know any of that I knew about pokies, but I didn't know any of the rest of it. Thank you. Somebody is a casual gambler that likes using all of the free play, match play promotions from American Casino Guide and the Las Vegas Advisor. Both of these have valid coupons that run the length of the calendar year. Will the casinos allow a person to use 2020 coupons on New Year's Eve and 2021 coupons on New Year's Day? Or will this draw the ire of players clubs? And my thought is, yeah, they probably will, especially if you go with a different booth attendance. They, inside the computer, they'll have a box that you can't see, but they click it if you've already redeemed the 2020 ACG coupon. And so when you redeem it, they click it there so you can't redeem it twice. So when it's 2021, they'll have a new box that says 2021 ACG coupon. And if it's empty, they'll click it. Now, if you go back to the same booth attendant, they remember you maybe, but generally they're just clicking boxes and there's so many people there, they probably won't remember you. Another question is from a inattentive dealer who paid a winning hand at 5 times the original bet because they paid me in the wrong color. And another dealer let me double down on 3 cards at a casino where this is not part of the rule. I asked if I could. The dealer said yes. Could exploiting any of these, either of these changes lead to criminal charges? And the answer generally is no. If a dealer overpays you, most APs quietly accept it and put the chips into their stack. If it's a different color, such as being played in black when the rest of your chips are red and green, players hold them in their hands for a while and then put them into the pocket while reaching for an iPhone or chapstick or whatever. If the dealer lets you double down on three cards, just do it. If the pit notices and come over to correct the situations, let them. It's the dealer who's in trouble for making the mistake. The player is not expected to be knowledgeable on every rule and procedure. Is that right? Is that what you would do, Richard?
Yeah, I mean, can you get arrested for it? It can happen in rare occurrences. Things have happened where they think that the player is colluding with the dealer. Usually that's a situation where the dealer has made more than just one mistake. Something as blatant as paying you the wrong color chips. You know, it's always a risk, but I would say the risk is very low. And
yeah, and it happens rarely. Now, if it just happens once in a session, which is probably going to be the case, that's happened to me. I was betting a green and a red. I was betting $30, and the guy next to me was betting a 125, a black and a green, and we both got paid 125 when the dealer busted. And I just took the money quietly and kept going. But that was the only time in the whole session that it happened. And, okay. The next one is from a beginning card counter. He says, when the count is good for the player, is the count also good for the dealer? In other words, if it's likely aces and tens show up for the dealer as well as the player, how is there an advantage of the dealer likely when the dealer's also likely to have a strong hand? And I'm good at the beginner questions. Richard's good at the harder ones. So I get this one first. And first of all, on a blackjack, the dealer gets paid even money and the player gets paid 3-2, hopefully, or 6-5 if you're on that kind of game. And the biggest thing is the dealers have to hit until they get to 17 or higher. And the player can choose whether or not to hit. So the player will hit more frequently when there's low cards left, will hit less frequently when there are high cards left. The dealer must hit till he gets at least 17. But insofar as the initial hand goes, they're equally likely to get any particular initial hands. It's just what they do after the initial hands. Richard.
Yeah, no, you're 100%.
What did I forget?
And the player is allowed to double down into split pairs and get more money on the table. So.
Yes. Yes, and to even to bet more and get more money on the table. Yep. Okay, sometimes we mention the blackjack team, the Greeks and the Czechs. Is this because they were or are from Europe? They travel to play in the United States or because they're Greek or Czech Americans? As a European, I've been wondering why they were called that for a while now.
So the Czechs, some of the players on the team were from Czechoslovakia. That's how they got called the Czechs. The Greeks was not a name they called themselves. I think that was foisted on them by some surveillance people. But the people who ran the team were Greek-American, not from Greece.
Yeah.
And at one point we were calling our team the French team just to have a country to even though none of us is French.
All right. This player recently switched from blackjack to machines. He knows that 1099s will generate a W2G, or excuse me, a ticket over 1199 will generate a W2G, but what if you go with two tickets to the window of 1,000 apiece. Does that do you get a 1099? Do you get it? Well, a 1099 or a W2G for that? And the answer is no. You do not.
He's a little bit confused there. The ticket doesn't if you go to the cage with a $1,200 ticket, it does not generate a W2G or a 1099. It's only if you hit a jackpot for that amount.
Yeah, if you go over 10,000, that's a CTR situation, currency transaction report. And some places reported at 3,000 for, is it 6A? Is that the ruling?
Yeah, it's called Know Your Customer. I don't know. But yeah, I think 3,000 they're required to fill out some different form.
So you learn which casinos, how you can cash out at the kiosk. If some kiosk will cash out all the way to $29.99 and some won't cash out more $800 or higher. So if you're playing on a casino, so I try to keep the tickets under the limit just so that I, can cash them out at the machines. And so, can't always do that. But, it's a nice problem to have you run your tickets up to 5,000. You just can't lose enough to get it down to less than 3,000. So, but every casino has its own rule on that. All right. This is a, we're actually running out of time. We have several more questions, which is good because, we're going to do another show of this in the near future, but we don't have enough questions for an entire show. So
you can send us more questions.
Yeah. At gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or put the questions in the, if you listen to the podcast on the gamblingwithanedge.com page, there's a place for comments. And I read those comments, and often they lead to questions for this. You can send me an email. You can send Richard an email or Twitter. And so these come from lots of different places. And sometimes they just come up from one of my classes, and I'll just put them here as though they came from our email. It's not exactly from the mailbag, and so I'm cheating, but I hope you forgive me. All right.
And speaking of the comments section at gamblingwithanedge.com, somebody recently posted, you know, oh, not another backgammon episode, which totally I get it. I mean, we realize that the majority of our listeners are not backgammon players. You know, if you want to suggest people, we are always looking for more guests. And so you can send us your suggestions and we will try, you know, to get more and different and other things, other people.
Yeah, but let's also talk about the kind of guests we're not looking for. We're not looking in general for touts, somebody who is selling picks. We've had several of them want to come on the show. Some have accidentally made it on the show, and we did not realize they were touts until they showed up, and they're not coming back. But in general, we're not looking for touts.
We also don't want your brother-in-law who wins all the time, every time he goes to Las Vegas.
Yeah, if somebody does approach us, we'll ask them to give us a list of things they would be talking about, or what they're expert at, or if it's a blackjack player, give us some examples of some interesting backoff situations, or how they got started, or things like that. Sometimes if they're local, we'll go out and have a lunch or something with it to get a sense of, are they going to be a good guest? So, but we're definitely always looking for new guests with 52 episodes a year to fill up. And we've been doing this for 7 or 8 years now. It's we're always looking for new ones. So
actually, in January, it'll be 10 years.
Is that right?
Yeah, this is our 10th year. Well, your 10th year. I wasn't here at the beginning, but yeah.
Yes. So you missed a year and a half. So there's the first 6 months with Frank Nealand. And Michael Shackelford had at least, and then you were here for a year or so. And then Michael Shackelford was for a year. And then he got burned out and you moved to Vegas and
I've
been
back.
Pleasantly stuck with you ever since.
Right.
So, good. Well, I'm warning you, 10 more years and I'm out of here. This is not something I'm going to do forever.
Right.
Anyway, thank you, Richard. This was fun.
We got to do our recommended?
If you have one.
I do. My recommendation this week is, for last night, which is June 14th's episode of a show called Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. John Oliver is a British comedian who used to be on The Daily Show, and now he has his own show on HBO. And last night's episode was all about facial recognition software. And so, A, he's really funny, but B, this episode in particular will be interesting to, you know, people who play in casinos because we keep hearing more and more about facial recognition. So that's my recommendation for this week.
Very good.
Oh, and usually if you don't have HBO Go or HBO Max or whatever, usually I think you can find his shows on YouTube after they've aired. So it should be up there.
And I didn't think I had a recommendation, but I do. I get an email from Matthew Dix, who's a storyteller. And in a recent one, he gave a link to a video about Squirrel Ninja. So if you go to YouTube and look up Squirrel Ninja, get the 21-minute version. You'll be glad you did. It's a great video. Watch it with your kids. It's just great. And you'll like it on a lot of different levels. It starts out with trying to stop squirrels from getting into bird feeders, and the squirrels are very inventive. And so he builds a obstacle course for the squirrels, and it's well done. And it's fun.
Yeah. It's entertaining. I watched it.
All right. So thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.